broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Your individuals have traditionally...
It's frustration. I mean, it's pure frustration. I mean, I think,
what we got was a speech that was excessively partisan, dramatically inaccurate.
It's a miracle that everyone is okay today. We're grateful that they are.
Jing Chong Ling Wong Ting Tong.
A-hole.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. It is a Thursday morning here at the El Pacifico and elsewhere. This is a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, and we go places other talk shows can only dream about going. They wish they could, but they can't, and they are forevermore destined to be relegated to the dusty back of the closet of talk radio. Let's put it that way, man. And we're just waiting to bust out of the closet. Yeah. How did I ever get to that, man? Well, anyway. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, our news and comment hour. With me, Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman. We'll get into it in a second. A reminder that we're online at philhendryshow.com. And you can look at a live-streaming video of our show right now. Live-streaming webcast, Phil TV in HD. And if you tune in right now, there I am with the beautiful El Pacifico behind me, where it's always sunny. A little bit of B-roll there on the ocean.
Yeah, it's kind of sloppy day when they videoed that.
Yeah, it looks a little sloppy, not very good shape, but a lot of white water.
I don't know nothing about surfing. Well, you got talking all that, it sounds like ching chong, ching tong wall.
What do you mean?
You mean, sir, that ain't surf talk, that's just ocean talk, you know.
No, it sounds like
ching chong, ling long, ting tong.
That's what it sounds like to me.
All right, okay. Well, you know what a wave is, huh?
Yeah, I know what a wave is.
Well, it looks like a bunch of slop. Look at it, it's all white water. Anyway, welcome to the show. And get your backstage pass, because not only do you get the live streaming video podcasts of each and every show available through iTunes, as well as our Classic Phil podcast, as well as thousands and thousands of hours of archived material. And once we've filled out 2001, brother, we are ready to rock and roll with all of them are basically downloads now, but we're still fixing a few of those busted links. I mean, I just have to tell you this, guys. When we got this website, when we got the Phil Hendry website, and it became we owned it, all right? It became our property as opposed to the property of a big broadcast company. There was a lot of work to do, man, because if there's one thing that the big broadcast companies don't know how to do, if there's one thing they don't know how to do among the many things they don't know how to do, one of them is maintaining a website. They don't know from websites. And so we had stuff with busted links. We had stuff that was supposed to be there, wasn't there. We had all kinds of problems. And we have very patiently and meticulously gone through the website, and we are correcting all of these. But it's at this point right now, our website holds the largest amount of material than any other radio show website in the world, period. Think about that. And think about that while you're getting your backstage pass. All right. Anyway, that's philhendryshow.com. Bunch of stuff going on in the news. One of them is AP falling for a hoax story. I think this is a good one to start off with.
Yeah, well, it's in keeping with everything. When you talk about how people don't know, you know, they believe everything.
Yes, basically you're talking about the gullibility of people. Well, it isn't just people that are gullible. It is now the long tried and true news gathering agencies that are gullible. It's AP that's falling for, and why would AP fall for a hoax? As we've said so many times before, over and over and over and over and over again, somebody else is bound to say it. AP and the other old school traditional news gathering outfits find themselves increasingly in competition with the internet, where information is online and out into the atmosphere quicker than you can say your Uncle Sue.
My Uncle Sue. See, that was faster.
Yeah. Well, no, that wasn't faster. The other.
The information would be faster than that.
Through the use of legal tax shelters and benefits. Now, listen, this is a bullcrap story that AP bought into. Through the use of legal tax shelters and benefits, General Electric, the largest corporation in the world, was on track to pay approximately nothing, zero, in U.S. taxes on more than $14.2 billion in profits last year. What I'm reading to you now is not true. It is a hoax story that was put out by an activist group called the Yes Men. They are known for issuing hoax statements claiming major attitude changes in corporate America. Or so they like to tell you with their press release, which may be a hoax in and of itself.
Maybe they're a hoax.
Maybe they aren't an activist group. Maybe they're just a bunch of guys with pimply skin and, you know, they're staying home from school a lot. Anyway, facing public outcry over the revelation, the company's decided to take an unprecedented route, pledging to donate its entire $3.2 billion tax return to the U.S. Treasury. So the story that AP bought, and a few other people, by the way, was that General Electric wasn't going to be paying any corporate any taxes at all on their $14.2 billion profit. And so they were getting $3.2 billion back in a tax return, and they were going to take that tax return and give it all over to the U.S. Treasury. However, not true. That's what the Associated Press was reporting Wednesday morning. It turns out the whole embarrassment could have been avoided with a phone call. A fake media advisory published to a website not affiliated with GE claimed CEO Jeffrey Immelt had said all seven of our foreign tax havens are entirely legal, but Americans have made it clear that they deplore laws that enable tax avoidance. While we owe it to our shareholders to use every legal loophole to maximize returns, we also owe something to the American people. We didn't write the laws that let us legally avoid paying taxes. Congress did. But we benefit from those laws, and now we'd like to share those benefits. The fake release added that GE's move could serve as an example for other U.S. corporations. All right. So I suppose that this was this group called the Yes Man, a so-called activist group. I guess in a perfect world, a company that doesn't pay taxes and got a $3.2 billion tax return would donate that back to the U.S. Treasury. And the Yes Men, I suppose, are hoping against hope that that will actually happen. I don't know what world they live in. It was a good hoax, guys, but beyond that, you ain't going to get, you know.
First of all, when's it ever going to happen?
Well, that's a good point. When's it ever going to happen that a company as big as GE ain't going to have to pay taxes? Anyway, said Deidre Latour, a spokeswoman for GE, it's a hoax and GE did not receive a $3.2 billion tax refund. The spoof came amid an ongoing battle in Washington between President Obama's Democratic Party and the Republican-controlled House of Representatives over how to cut the nation's budget deficit. GE shares slipped after at least two news organizations, the Associated Press and Dow Jones, reported the hoax as fact, which is also a little bit of a lesson to you that Wall Street is not a science. Wall Street is not a place where they vet all of these facts and then go in and very soberly place buy orders or sell orders based upon the very sober evaluation of these facts. No, Wall Street is a madhouse like anything else in business. Wall Street is as nuts as your kitchen at 3:30 in the afternoon when the kids come home from school. That's Wall Street. You know how it is? Well, you ever been standing in the kitchen and like three kids come just charging in with their friends? And all of a sudden what you have is a mix of, so how'd you guys, what was school like? Oh, there was a bunch of stuff that went on. You don't know whether it's true or not. They're grabbing cookies and they're grabbing milk and you're getting snippets of information. You don't know what the hell is going on, man. That's like every day on Wall Street. I mean, there's some stuff that they're telling you that's true. In fact, everything they're saying is true, but you're just getting it in half. What did you just say? You said that one. Yeah, and another guy, he threw a brick and a car blew up. And a car blew up? What do you mean a car blew up? And that's Wall Street. So you'll often see prices fluctuating so crazy. And here's an example of prices fluctuating on a total bullcrap story. Doesn't exist, never did happen, won't ever happen, can't happen, ain't gonna happen. These guys are supposed, you know, the cats on Wall Street and those who are the shareholders of these companies should have a little bit better grasp of the facts, don't you think? And to get a story that GE isn't going to pay any taxes and they're going to donate all of their tax return to the U.S. Treasury, I don't care how much sweetness and light is in your world. I don't care how positive you feel about the human race. No way does a sane human being believe that. No way.
Yeah, I didn't believe it. I don't know nothing about it.
Well, I wouldn't. Knowing how much money those guys made, and they get a $3.2 billion windfall? You know what that is? That's capital investment money. What am I saying? That's bonus money. AP later pulled a story, which AP spokesman Paul Colford said, and I think this is probably the truest thing in this entire story, It was a clear case of editorial error. What does that mean? It means some dumbass was asleep at the switch. Dow Jones followed up its headline, which cited the AP with GE's rebuttal. Dow Jones has a little news service. They reported it, but then they basically what Dow Jones did is they just took the raw story from AP, said, well, here's what they're saying. Oh, no, it's bull crap. Okay, then here's what they're saying. Dow Jones is more or less just a clearinghouse for stories. I don't know that they have actual reporters on the street themselves. We moved to clarify the original headline, so on and so forth. So GE's tax rate has been in the public eye since the New York Times reported last month that it paid no U.S. income taxes in 2010, a claim that GE denies. GE has acknowledged that its 2010 tax bill was low due to hefty losses at its GE Capital Finance unit during the financial crisis. Jeffrey Immelt acknowledged in a March speech in Washington the company tries to keep its tax bill as low as it can, but said it does so legally. Everybody tries to keep their tax bill as low as they possibly can. What do you mean you try to keep your tax bill as low as you possibly can? So what are you doing? Either you can keep it low. You know, look, if you're making so much money, there's nothing you can do to keep your tax bill low. What do you mean you try to keep it low? Anyway, that is the story of GE, which is no story at all. World-famous Phil Henry Show here. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. The remains of an airman missing in action from World War II. Have been ID'd and will be returned home to his family for burial. We'll get into it on The Phil Henry Show, Phil TV in HD, on philhenryshow.com. By the way, the Phil Henry Show t-shirts are in, baby. We got them in large, extra large, double extra large, triple extra large, man.
What about fourple? Or form?
Fourple? I don't know, man. I don't know if we have fourple. I don't even think I know if there's such a thing as fourple. But anyway, the t-shirts are in. Go on over to the shop and get some here. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. Ha! Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. What is that, bud?
That's a CNN on a feed.
I don't want to look at Pierce Morgan. Get me that other good one they got.
Yeah, they got the other one. They did an actual one, man. Get that.
What are you talking about? You want a CNN?
I don't want that CNN that's got Whoopi's kisser on it. No offense, Whoop, but I want... Get him out of here, Pierce Morgan. I didn't like Larry King either, so... It's not that I'm prejudiced against English people and black people much.
Yeah, but he's kidding, man. You ain't kidding.
Anyway, we'll get into it in a moment here. Our Phil Henry Show, back with you here. World famous, radio for patriots, by patriots. And, of course, as you know, each and every night as we lead the way into the future, we are stepping over the heads and across the prostate bodies of prostrate, not prostate, bodies of bud. Of liberals and progressives, of these pseudo-New Agers and New Worlders, Whole Worlders and One Worlders, and Whole Foodsers. In other words, a-holes, I think is the way it's been put on The Phil Henry Show. All right, remains of U.S. airmen missing since 1943 identified. This is a fascinating story, and it's fascinating from the standpoint of how long we spent after World War II looking for missing soldiers. A good 4 years in the Pacific, from 1945 to 1949, what was called then the Graves Registration Unit. You know, the U.S. military during the Second World War, which was kind of has been the model for wartime organization and administration ever since, had all of these units that came in behind the fighting units. We had something called the Monuments Division. Do you know what that was?
Uh-uh.
The Monuments Division was in Europe, and these were soldiers who were also art historians, or these were American soldiers in uniform, but they were individuals who knew art, recognized art, knew the value of it, and they were there looking for art pieces that had been stolen by the Germans and that had been confiscated by the Nazi hierarchy and hidden. And among the people who did that was Hermann Goering. So the United States, Canada, and Great Britain had these monuments officers go in and find these art pieces. And you'll see in some historic footage, documentary footage, you'll see some of these these pieces of art that were found by these monument guys and returned either to the museums that they were stolen from or to the private individuals they were stolen from. And a lot of them were, I can't think of which ones right. I think it was like a Van Gogh in there or something.
Who?
Van Gogh.
No, I'm not familiar.
Yeah, well, that figures, man.
Van Gogh, man, you never heard of Van Gogh?
No.
All right, well, don't get pissed off. But if I'm saying something like Van Gogh, don't go, who? Okay?
Well, I never heard of him.
Well, that makes one of you. All right. The remains of a Massachusetts airman missing in action from World War II have been identified and will be returned to his family for burial, according to the Department of Defense. Wow. Army Air Force's 2nd Lieutenant Martin P. Murray, who was 21 years of age from Lowell, Massachusetts, took off on October the 27th, 1943, from an airfield near Port Moresby, New Guinea, with 11 other crew members aboard a B-24D Liberator, a bomber. At the time, plans were being formulated to mount an attack on the Japanese fortification at Rabaul in Papua New Guinea's New Britain province, according to the Defense Department's POW Missing Personnel Office in a statement. The crew was assigned to conduct reconnaissance on nearby shipping lanes in the Bismarck Sea. Excuse me. If you remember seeing The Pacific, did you see that on HBO?
Yeah.
They had a whole section devoted to New Britain, and it was around in the late 1943. It was a terribly bloody and debilitating conflict because not only were they fighting Japanese, but it was a rainy season. There was quite a bit of malaria. It was very, very difficult terrain. It was very jungled. Excuse me. Got a hacking problem here, you know.
You need some water or something.
Give me that coffee, will you?
This?
No, the coffee, bud.
This.
Give me the coffee. I don't want a sip out of your Mambo malt liquor bottle.
Uh-huh.
All right, in any event, let me just get to this, will you, and quit bugging me? In any event, so these guys take off, 21 years of age, the year 1943. A young man with the other young men of his crew, and there they are in the South Pacific, just another time, another place in the history of this country and the world. World War II, they're fighting the Japanese in the South Pacific. During the mission, the crew was told to land at a friendly airstrip nearby due to poor weather. That last radio transmission from the crew did not indicate their location. Multiple search missions in the following weeks never located the aircraft, so they got caught in some bad weather. After World War II, the Army Graves Registration Service searched for the missing airmen, including Murray, in the area, but concluded in June of 1949 that all the men were unrecoverable, according to the Department of Defense. In August of 2003, now we cut to 2003.
How many years is that?
54. From 1949 to 2003, 54. In August of 2003, a team from the Joint POW-MIA Accounting Command received information on a crash site from a citizen in Papua New Guinea while investigating another case, according to the statement. The citizen gave the team an identification card from one of the crew members and said there were possible human remains at the site.
Well, what's that identification card?
Well, whoever the citizen was, they found stuff. They found a man's ID. They might have found other personal effects. And they said, well, I don't know. There might be human remains there. Other teams attempted to visit the site twice in 2004, but were unable to visit because of poor weather and hazardous conditions at the helicopter landing site. Another team was able to successfully excavate the site from January to March of 2007, where they found several identification tags from the B-24D crew, as well as human remains.
So that's when they found them.
Exactly. Scientists from the Joint POW-MIA Accounting Command and the Armed Forces DNA Identification Laboratory used forensic identification tools, circumstantial evidence, dental comparisons, and mitochondrial DNA to identify Murray's remains. Murray's remains will be buried Saturday in Marshfield, Massachusetts, according to the Defense Department. And for further information, at the end of World War II, the U.S. government was unable to recover or identify 79,000 Americans. Now that number has decreased to 74,000. So from the end of World War II to today, we've only been able to identify 5,000 of the 79,000 guys that were missing.
That's a lot. Even more Vietnam.
yes, even more than Vietnam. And you can bet that these guys didn't suddenly decide to become Japanese citizens or hide out. We'll be back with more here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, including, we've got coming up, but, oh, black students sold Phil to the Mark slave auction. That's nuts, man. It's nuts.
For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And if you take a look at our website, philhendryshow.com, you see that we feature our featured affiliate this week, which is KPRC in Houston. Great people down there. Black students sold at a mock slave auction. Robert, what do you think of that?
I don't know, man. You know, all these stories say they sound worse than they are when you finally get into it.
Well, you know, here's the thing that I think a lot of teachers make the mistake, but we'll read this. They make the mistake of, oh, we want to have a mock slave auction. I guess that means we should only have the black students be the slaves. Now, if you were reenacting, but if it's for the educational value of showing kids what a slave auction looks like, and maybe even putting them into the shoes of the slaves, I think it would be better to have both white and black students, because you're not. It's not a historical reenactment for the purposes of some realistic, you know, rendering of what happened. It's a history lesson, and this is for fourth graders. Trying to bring a Civil War lesson to life, history teacher Jessica Boyle turned her Norfolk, Virginia fourth grade classroom into a slave auction on April the 1st. Black and mixed-race students at Sewell's Point Elementary School, who make up 40% of the class, were separated from the rest of the students and auctioned as part of an instructional unit on the Civil War. See, this is my whole point.
Yeah, but that's how it happened. How can you can't keep making history be wrong and everything.
He ain't saying that, man.
Hold on, let me explain, Bud. You know, this teacher wants to reenact the Civil War. All right. Is this a theater piece or is this an educational setting?
It's educational.
Then she's trying to educate the students, correct?
Yeah. But that's how it happened.
Wait a minute. That's not what I asked you. If you're trying to educate the students, then the first thing you want to do is educate the students as to what was the experience of the slaves, what was the experience of the slave owners. The black kids and their ancestors already get it about being a slave, and the white kids and their ancestors already get it about being the slave owner or the slave holder or the slave seller or the slave, you know, because we got so many white families. My family never owned slaves. No. Yeah, okay, your family never owned slaves. You just, what? We rented a few, but you leased your slaves as opposed, yes, that's what we did. So we never owned, we leased. And that's what I can say, not about slaves, but about the beautiful 2011 Jaguar. I'm kidding. All right, so...
But it's true, right?
Yeah, it is true. All right, so anyway, in Norfolk, Virginia, trying to bring a Civil War lesson to life, history teacher Jessica Boyle, who I'm sure is a really nice person and a really great lady and really means well, but boy, did you butcher this one alive! No, she turned her fourth grade class into a slave auction. Now, ordinarily, turning a bunch of fourth graders into a slave auction, I can't think of anything funnier or more relaxing on a beautiful Wednesday afternoon. However, that having been said, black and mixed-race students at Sewell Point Elementary School, who make up 40% of the class, were separated from the rest of the students and auctioned as part of an instructional unit on the Civil War. School principal Mary Russian became aware of the simulation when the school received two parent complaints. Parents contacted the school principal to indicate their concerns about the lesson, and that prompted the principal to investigate and issue a letter to all parents in the classroom. The Norfolk Public School curriculum, is this the story that we wanted to do, Jace? I guess it isn't. We were going to do the, pornography. Anyway, the parents contacted the school, and they were all pissed off. Now, Boyle's mock Civil War slave auction was not part of the approved curriculum. That was another thing that got him into trouble. Here is some audio from the entire folderol. WVEC Television spoke with parents from the school who reacted to Jessica Boyle's mock slave auction.
It's like, oh my God, I hope the teacher knew what she was doing.
Why is it so uneasy to talk about?
Why is it uneasy? Because I'm an African American, so I could imagine, you know, being in school and basically made fun of in front of everybody.
This was wrong. It wasn't the right thing to do in a classroom environment.
Sometimes your teacher isn't always right, and it's lucky enough to have students to know what's wrong.
Ms. Boyle is a nice teacher, and, like, I don't know why she did what she did.
Look, it's if you're teaching kids, you want the kids to learn about the experience. So you have white and black kids participate as slaves. White and black kids participate as slave owners. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I don't understand it. That black kids should know that's what black people did.
What black people did, you might just... I understand what you're saying, bud, but we're not doing a Civil War reenactment. We're teaching kids. And how many times are you going to do so? This is not the first story of its kind that I've read. It's not the first time I've heard about a parent being pissed off about something like this. Not the first time that we've had to go into this kind of situation. I get it. I understand the teacher's a good teacher. I understand she's trying to give kids an experience, something visceral, something tangible. What did it feel like? What was it like? But the white kids don't know what it's like being a slave, and the slave kids don't know what it's like being an owner or a leaser or whatever the hell, a plantation holder, and what the mentality was there and what the process was. If you're teaching young kids about this experience, then you teach them about the experience from both sides.
Dad, I don't understand what a white kid got to learn about it, though.
You know what? You're just being stupid now.
Dude, that's my point, man. You ain't never going to make him understand because he don't want to understand.
Why am I being stupid?
You know what I'm saying. It makes sense, but you just want to be a jackass. So forget it.
No, really. I just...
Forget it. All right. The other stuff, the story we wanted to do, believe me, I wanted to do it because I anticipated Bud giving me a hard time with another one. L.A. Public Library seeks solution to dig this online porn. Whoa! Current policy allows unrestricted access to the web.
Any age?
I think so. Public libraries in Los Angeles are considering ways to deal with people viewing online pornography on library computers, including installing filters and rearranging terminal layouts. The issue was a topic of discussion at an LA City Council committee meeting on Tuesday. The problem came to light last December after a line of school children were waiting to check out books at the Chinatown branch as a man nearby was watching porn online. Parents complained to the library staff. Current, you know, one of the things that I've found with the increase of information and the increase of access to information, especially the internet, but also what the internet has created, which is just more info and more ways to deliver it. One of the things that has come to light is the number of slobs that we've got in this world, the number of classless slobs, just people without any class at all, people without any social decorum at all, people without any respect at all, people without any sense that they live in a world, people that want to outrage, people that want to foul up and befoul things around them, people that want to just act like pigs because they can. Here's a guy in a public library looking at porn with little kids standing there. Does he care? No. Why? Because he wasn't treated good when he was a kid, so why should he treat any kids good? That's the thinking.
Well, that makes sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. Nothing makes less sense.
Why do you say that?
What do you mean, why do I say that? What are you two guys, are you soft or something?
Well, why? If he wasn't treated good.
If he wasn't treated good as a kid, all the more reason for him to treat kids good. All the more reason for that guy to act like an adult, act like a man, and treat kids better than the way he was treated. The problem with the world is just exactly what you two guys said, okay?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying go around treating people bad and everything.
No, but the problem with the world is exactly what you guys just talked about. Since I was treated bad as a kid, I'm going to go out and treat everybody else bad. And that just keeps going on and on and on and on. And the world just, you know, there's a real bad smell.
Something better open a window.
Yeah, open a window is right. Current L.A. Public Library policy grants visitors unfettered internet access unless a person is viewing child pornography or tries to engage other people in viewing pornography. In those cases, police may be called. Library officials say they have considered installing filters to block obscene content, but licensing fees are expensive and the system is imperfect. The filters block websites with certain keywords and phrases deemed obscene. That means, for example, that they could keep patrons from accessing websites about breast cancer and other medical sites if, in point of fact, they were trying to block websites that were pornographic featuring, you know, bare breasts. Additionally, First Amendment protections give patrons the right to access some pornography, according to city officials. Well, now, wait just a minute. Yes, you can go and access pornography anywhere you want, but does the public library have to provide it, or don't you have to go home and get it, or go to the store and buy it? In other words, who says that, you know, the First Amendment guarantees you the right to view pornography, but does it guarantee you the right for somebody to deliver it to you?
No, man, they're not talking about that. They're saying if you have a constitutional right to look at pornography and they have internet, then the internet shouldn't block it. That's what they're doing. They're blocking what's coming in.
I don't know. The Supreme Court ruled in 2003 that public libraries can use federal funds to install filters that block obscene material that may be harmful to children, but not until a patron asks for content to be unblocked. But only until a patron asks for content to be unblocked. So they can block it, but if a patron says, I want it unblocked, then you better unblock it, Jack. Deputy City Attorney Bazia Jankowski said that although the city has the legal right to install filters, the question of what to filter is complicated. Well, all right, then obviously you guys had the right idea. You put these terminals in places where children will not be.
Yeah, you got to put them back in like a porn area or something.
Yeah, that'd be great, man. The public library has some adult section where a bunch of slobs sit there all day long looking at porn.
No, I thought most of them sites are subscription sites anyway.
Good. Well, not all. Not all subscription sites, man. I mean, there's all kinds of porn online that is not subscription required.
How do you know?
Well, as soon as we get off the air, I use.
Never mind how I know.
It's really a gray issue because it's really difficult to define what is obscenity, said the city attorney. I know some people who might consider scenes in an R-rated movie obscene. Well, that's a load, okay? We're talking about what has been defined by the Supreme Court, to wit, community standard. Thank you. She pointed out the Supreme Court has not yet ruled on wholesale blocking of internet pornography at public libraries. What do you think about that? Not you guys. What do you guys in the audience think, you know? Being a conservative, and by that I mean an individual who is a conservative from the standpoint of I don't want to see any progressive encroachment on my rights by the groovy-ass federal government. Any liberal encroachment on my rights by the increasingly benevolent and knows everything and loves everything and is everything federal government. Because I don't happen to think that they do know everything and love everything and is everything. That's what it means. That's what I mean by conservative. The original way of doing things, which was this. Hi, I'm a citizen. I'd like to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You're the government. Here's the stuff that you get to do. Well, we've got some other ideas. No other ideas. Do I get to see pornography? Yes, you do. Do I want my children to see it? No, I do not. Put in the blocks in place and the filters in place so that that does not happen. Well, Mr. Hendry, you have to understand. No, I don't understand anything. These kids were checking books out, and right next to them was some pig looking at pornography. That's easy enough to solve. If you don't want to filter it, you don't want to block it because you're afraid of what the Supreme Court ruling means, then you just move it to a section of the library where only old, disgusting perverts hang out in overcoats and sneakers and look at their porn in the public library in peace.
Hey.
Thank you.
You running for public office?
I think I will. All right, a bizarre story of a man that recruited Chinese nationals to create a phony army is coming up next. And we'll be talking about that. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com, our archives, Phil TV and HD, T-shirts, shot glasses, best-of CDs, mugs, the blog, and of course we are on Twitter, twitter.com/realphilhendry, twitter.com/realphilhendry. See you on the other side of this here commercial thing.
Radio for patriots, by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. For patriots, by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Well, welcome back here on the final segment of our show here. It is Thursday morning. We'll see you guys tonight, of course. We have our Friday night show, and on Saturdays we have our local show in Los Angeles for KFI AM 640. You can join us, everybody across the country, at philhendryshow.com for the video cast of that. Now, some nut, and I haven't heard a story like this since the Gulf War or since the last time we had Jay Santos on the show. Some guy recruited Chinese nationals to create a phony army. Now, what does this mean? It's according to the police. An El Monte, California man has been arrested and charged for allegedly recruiting 100 Chinese nationals to join a phony Army Special Forces unit that he led as the Supreme Commander.
This sounds like a Citizens Auxiliary Police.
Yep, sounds just like it. Yu Peng Deng, also known as David Deng, made his first court appearance Wednesday on felony charges. Agents with the FBI and the U.S. Department of Defense arrested 51-year-old Yu Peng Deng, a.k.a. David Deng, a Chinese national. Deng was being held in lieu of $500,000 bail. Now, he's charged in state court with 13 counts of theft by false pretenses, manufacturing deceptive government documents, and counterfeit of an official government seal. If convicted on all charges, he faces a maximum of more than 8 years in prison. Prosecutors are alleging that in 2008, Mr. Deng created an unauthorized military unit he called the U.S. Army Military Special Forces Reserve Unit, and he recruited other Chinese nationals primarily in the San Gabriel Valley to join up.
That's where you're from.
Thank you for reminding me.
Oh, man, they got some dumb Chinese people out there.
What do you mean they got some dumb Chinese people? They got dumb everything out there. I'm very proud of that.
Sorry.
According to prosecutors, Deng told them joining the unit was a path to U.S. citizenship. Oh, my God. As a self-titled Supreme Commander, Deng allegedly charged each recruit initiation fees as high as $450 and $125 annual renewal fee. Oh, these poor guys. Recruits allegedly could increase their rank by making cash donations. I shouldn't laugh because these obviously are guys who have some patriotism or level of commitment to their new country, and they're willing to join a military unit. And what are they joining? Some phony baloney citizens auxiliary police set up by this nut. In addition, prosecutors allege Deng provided his recruits with fake U.S. Army uniforms as well as phony documents and military IDs. The recruits were also instructed to report to the defendant's office in Temple City, made up to look like an official U.S. military recruiting center to undergo military training and indoctrination. The recruits even marched in a parade in Monterey Park and took a tour of the U.S. Midway Museum in San Diego, all while dressed in uniform. He's been ordered to return to court for arraignment on May 2nd. Separately, he was charged Wednesday with one count of possession of child pornography. What is this guy, man? What is this?
I don't know. He's like, he's patriotic, but he's also mentally ill.
What do you mean patriotic? The guy's a flim-flam man. He's a con artist. Possession of child pornography stemming from a search warrant executed at his home. In that case, he faces up to 3 years in state prison if he's convicted on that charge. You know, I got to tell you something. I don't know how the FBI, Homeland Security, all of the national police presence that we have and the local police presence, I don't know how to keep up with all this bull crap. I mean, every time you turn around, there's something weird going on. Either some cat that has a diaper bomb, another guy with the underwear bomb, there's a guy here with a fake Chinese national militia unit, there's somebody else smuggling something in his turban, there's somebody else who wants to blow up an airport, somebody else wants to blow up a mall, there's some guy who used to be a psychiatrist and now he's gone off his rocker and he's shooting people down there at Fort Hood, and then there's another guy. And this guy at Fort Hood, you know, the more I hear about that case, and the more I hear these idiots talking about, why, what happened? How can we keep it from happening? The more I want to strangle Bud. And I don't want to do that, Bud.
Yeah, I don't want you to.
It seems pretty simple to me. If a man is making statements contrary to the interests of the U.S. military or the interests and the safety of the United States in general, that guy doesn't belong in the Army. That guy belongs, yeah, he should be investigated. Give me this bull crap about how he's got a right to free speech. My ass. Since when? He's in the freaking Army. Every time I hear this story, you know what I mean, Robert?
Yeah, I mean, well, I was talking about it. I was saying, yeah, you know, and the guy got recruited and he didn't seem to be a problem, but he was making these radical statements.
This guy is in the United States Army. He's a psychiatrist, and he's making radical statements. What are we not getting here, folks? Hello? The average guy on the street can see how jacked up that is. The average normal human being walking down the street can see right away that is not a, that's not cool. What are you talking about? Well, you know, he has a constitutional, he's got a constitutional right. He's in the United States Army, man. That is suspicious behavior. It's not like he's a member of some democratic organization where everybody gets a shot at burning the flag or something. This guy is a United States Army officer, and he's talking, he's bagging on the U.S., he's bagging on all of our efforts as a military force. There seems only one thing that we can do, ladies and gentlemen. Ban the son of a bitch, him and all of his Muslim friends. We can no longer trust them. I'm kidding, 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 kidding. World-famous Phil Henry Show is produced by Jason Rantz. Technical direction by our very, very good friend, John Ilk. And Dan Northcraft is our associate producer. PhilHenryShow.com. Head on over for the show log and for our on-demand video cast tomorrow. See you tonight on The Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.